So welcome back. We are off the couch with the Psych Guys. My name is Timothy Meyer, joined as always by Dr. Constantine Wookin. So Constantine, something that I've been thinking about lately. There's drinking problem.
Right. Yeah,
the term drinking problem gets thrown around a lot, but there's a lot of different types of drinking problems.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like, not every alcohol issue is the same, and I feel like that there's different kind of like types of drinkers out there.
For sure. No, I totally get it. And just, you know, these things usually come out more during the holidays. But to me, in my mind, working with people who struggle, especially with alcohol, because that's typically the most common one, at least the most, I should say, the most common one I see.
Yep.
you have your four different types. At least that's the way I try to think of it. The first one, it's, you know, lovingly called the health nut.
Okay.
Right? Because these people typically, you know, don't generally drink. You know, yep. Typically they're a very healthy diet. Typically there's a good amount of exercise. You know, we could have a different thing about over-exercising at some point. But like they have a different outlet, maybe you should say it that way, yep. Right? So alcohol doesn't really play a big role in their lives. And maybe sometimes at a holiday party or something like that, birthday party, maybe they have one or two or three, but that's because oftentimes there's a sense of control that goes into it, right? Like, so if you are watching exactly what you eat, if you're exercising in a particular regimen, right, there's a lot of consistency and control.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So if you think about it from that point of view, alcohol typically does the opposite, right? It allows people to let loose, lack of control, or depending on how much you drink. So sometimes even that experience, I've heard from some people, there's a sense of discomfort. So once they push to like their point of inebriation, they don't like that feeling. Like, unlike other people who love that feeling, other people, like, in usually in this category, they don't like that feeling because it feels out of control, right? And it feels like they might do something that they later regret, or just the feeling itself, not to have their faculties in complete control, is already either anxiety provoking or there's a discomfort because against how they structure their lives.
Yeah, interesting. And I would also probably add to that they might feel guilty for like the extra calories,
right?
Or, you know, I'm not giving my body what it needs to, right, recover and that sort of thing. But interesting how you talked about control.
Oh yeah, for sure. To me, that's such a salient point.
Yeah.
When it comes to that, because just any drug, if you think about it, it creates an experience of altered consciousness, altered, different from what you're used to, different from the control that you'd like to experience. So therefore, to me, these individuals often don't drink. I would also imagine, you know, that maybe going on a little limb here, it's also they might have more if they feel super comfortable and super safe from an emotional point of view with particular people, be it a significant other, friends, right? Because if you're going to plan to be out of control, you want to be at least that there's safe boundaries, right, in which to lose control. And if you're doing it in an interpersonal sphere, like at a club or a bar, restaurant, I would imagine you'd want it to be so that the people you're with, you trust almost implicitly, because they will provide safety for you, right? Like, so to me, those are the opportunities when these types of individuals typically have at least something to drink. But to your point, right, then they're counting calories, and then, you know, each drink is a ton of calories. So then it kind of, like, where do they take it from? Do they not eat, right? Like, then it becomes this whole sort of give and take in their mind, which creates then stress, and then, like, then fuck it, I'm not drinking.
Yep. I can understand that one a little bit. All right, so we have our health nut.
The health nut is, I mean, the takeaway message for me, and again, I'm not promoting drinking, but like, find ways where you can, you know, maybe from a clinical standpoint, just allow yourself like an exposure a little bit where you feel safe to feel a little bit lack of control, because in our lives, there's certain things that you can control and certain things you can't. I'm not suggesting using alcohol for that, but just something, if there's a takeaway, like, look at opportunities where you can embody or where you can allow yourself to feel less in control, because I think it's such an important emotional skill to have, that you're out of control, or situations out of control. As people age, there's lots of things that are out of their control, right? So to me, that's an important element, not necessarily with the drinking, but just in general, create like ways where you can feel a little bit out of control, getting used to that sensation.
Yeah. and not living so rigidly, right. Not living so in control, like that little bit of gray area, yeah. Of flexibility. Yeah, it is really,
because if you think about it, if you're and again, we're not talking in extremes here, but if you think about control, right, your limit, your life is smaller. Because why is it smaller? Because it's within the parameters of your control.
Yep.
But there's just so many things out there that are outside your control. So to me, having that open mind is almost like where the emotional stretch comes.
Yep.
Can you have an open mind, right? Oftentimes that's a challenge in itself.
Yeah, and you say that a lot. How it certain things, certain emotions, certain whatever can make life smaller.
For sure.
And I think that I couldn't agree more with you, with you about that.
Right.
And I think this is a tiny example of it too.
For sure, because like if it's fear of that, then fear is driving your life,
mm-hmm.
Right? Because if you control, it's smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, right? Like say eating disorders, let's say that start, or over exercising,
OCD,
right? OCD,
anxiety.
Same thing, right? It's limiting a person's lifestyle, which is again the opposite of what we try to do.
And it's literally like the comfort zone,
right?
Right?
Right.
Get smaller
and smaller.
And then the idea
smaller.
Is stepping out of our comfort zone is super uncomfortable,
right?
Right? But our world gets bigger.
Right, for sure. Like agoraphobia, right? Not yep. wanting to be in open spaces with other people. Like your life becomes really small to contain maybe to your apartment.
Yep.
Right? Like, so just imagine how much smaller that control is, right? Because agoraphobia, you can't control other people say or do. Right? Mm-hmm. But in your apartment, in your bedroom, in wherever you are, you have, you know, a lot more control.
Right? Yep.
So to me, for these people in this group, it's very important to kind of try to push the envelope a little bit more, be open-minded, lean into discomfort.
And drink. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Type of drinker number two.
True, two. So obviously the first one doesn't have any like drinking issues at all, right?
No.
Like, so that's I think that's obvious. Two is the... It's kind of like the person who uses alcohol at nighttime to de-stress, right? And that's like a common thing that they use. You know, usually these people drink between 1 to 3 drinks.
Uh-huh.
Usually one when they get home, then one with their dinner, and one after, right? Yep. To relax. They usually have like a ritual, something that they look forward to. They might have a cigar. It's just kind of like there's an enjoyment of the whole process,
mm-hmm.
and obviously the inebriation that comes from it. It's the way to unplug from work, de-stress, just kind of find their own zone for that, for those couple of hours after work.
Yeah, it's like the I'm just stressed drinker.
Right, right. So it's, and then it's just, there's a lot of like, well, what are you talking about? I'm functional. It never gets in the way. I still wake up in the morning. I still go to the gym. I still eat healthy, right? Like I don't have too many troubles with my significant others or whatever the case may be. Right, so it's just kind of like, that type of drinking often is, sometimes it's done by themselves, but often there's also a partner who mm-hmm. shares that sort of view. So maybe the guy has whiskey and let's say the wife has like wine, but it's there's that culture. Let's open up a bottle of wine, right? Like it's that sort of a sense to it. Yeah, sometimes they overdo it from time to time. Sometimes they do like to party. They usually host a lot. There's a lot of liquor flowing. So
yep.
Would you say that person has a problem? You know, that's challenging, right? Because we talk about internal distress and functional interference. Usually they don't really feel bad about it because usually there's no physical consequences, really not fighting. So there's very limited there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not feeling guilty about it. So usually that's kind of like under the radar, I'd like to say, right? Unless a bigger problem arises later. But usually these people don't usually get help. That's their lifestyle, really. There's just... Alcohol plays, I want to say, one of the central parts to their lives. Not because they're dependent on it, but because a lot of social activities around alcohol.
Yeah. What would your recommendation, I mean, if people are open for a mm-hmm. recommendation, what would it be for that? I have a couple ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, listen, people like to party, people like to have gatherings, and, you know, if social and it's something that people want to do, you know, that's up to them. If you're doing it daily, you know, I would probably start checking, like, why do you do that? Like, is your job too stressed? Like, what is the issue? Like,
yeah.
Why do you need, you obviously know you're more sluggish in the morning, right? That it's just like, what is the purpose? What are you trying to kind of detach from?
Yep.
You know, in order to be able to do that. But so to me, easy for me to say, but eliminating, you know, like the weekday drinking. Because if you think about it, you're doing three times, that's like 15 alcohol, like typically it's already kind of crossover into problem drinking. Nobody gets help for that, but just something to be mindful of.
Yeah, you know, and I really encourage people to kind of tune in. Well, sometimes I say it this way. Sometimes I'll say that people's solution behavior is to drink.
Right.
So like, okay, like drinking solves something. What does it solve? I feel stressed, anxious, overwhelmed, whatever. It's like, okay, well, you know, let's not focus only on this like solution behavior.
Right.
Let's look at the problem that it's solving. It's like, wow, you're really stressed.
Right.
And then how do we work on de-stressing? And there are so many other really, really great ways to de-stress.
Right.
Because ultimately, kind of like what you said a little bit, we can have a few drinks, but then you wake up the next morning, like you're dehydrated,
right.
You're a little sluggish, you're probably not on top of your game.
Right.
And then I see people kind of in this like little bit of like a, it's not really like a snowball effect, but it's this pattern where they're functioning like just below where they could be.
Right.
And that lower functioning leads to more stress.
Right.
Which needs, so you have to use the alcohol for the stress, but then we function a little bit less.
Right.
And it's almost like, man, if we could just like get rid of that alcohol and like you are your best self, you probably won't be as stressed.
I really like what you're saying, because it makes sense, because in a way they could snowball into bigger problems, right?
Because it could.
You're suboptimal, so you're more stressed, you're not doing as well. Then as the years go by, this isn't the type of person that, you know, that gets into trouble the same day. It kind of takes chronic use over time, and then there's reflection. Oh, I could have done so much more, but I didn't. Right? Like, I know that's retroactively speaking, it's pretty easy to say that. But in the moment, just something to consider. If you do find yourself having drinks every day or every other day, just start thinking about why you're doing it, and maybe there's just some adjustments that might be made in order to help you at least just enjoy it socially with friends rather than just every night kind of thing.
And to me, I think I've spoken to loads of people about this. It's doable. If you're having three a night, like,
sure.
See if we can bump it down to two.
Right.
Like see how that is, and then we bump it down to one or maybe
right.
every other or something like that. Okay.
Those
are our first two. We have the health nut, and then we have the I'm just stressed.
Right. So those types of people generally don't really get help, because especially the second the culture is around it, and they justify they don't really have a problem. So it's deconstructing, you know, the social life about it and the drinking while you do it. Right. So
yep. It
usually, if they come, that's like 20, 25 years into kind of having this sort of routine, if you will.
Routine.
So that's just something to consider. Again, the takeaway would be, can you start looking at why that's happening? And I really like the way you said it. You know, it's a solution. So what is the problem?
Mm-hmm.
Right. If solution is unproductive, right? What is the actual issue? So something to consider. The third one is the binge drinker.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, to me, that's sort of like the common one. And the binge drinking typically starts anywhere from high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it could go into 40s often.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, usually you don't really see that past like 45, 50. But also, listen, these things happen all the time. But that's your typical like, oh, my favorite football team is playing. We're getting together with the guys. Start on Friday. Then it's Friday. Then you recover on Saturday with the brunch that's already getting alcohol going. Right? Then there's Saturday night. Then we got to go out. Why, you know? And then there's liquor flowing. And then there's also Sunday brunch. So by the time Monday rolls around, it's been a boozy weekend. Right, so you know, 20, 30 drinks for the whole 2.5, 3-ish days, right? Like, so that's where problems begin to start, both from a, you know, just a medical standpoint, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of alcohol, you're probably dehydrated, not eating well, your electrolytes are off. So that's a problem. And this is where usually the problems start in interpersonal dynamics. This is where the girlfriend starts being upset. You didn't call, you missed, you say you're gonna be home at X and you came at Y. This is where the wife is like, oh my God, what's going on? You can't do this, we have kids. Anymore, I need you to completely stop. Oh my God, you're an alcoholic, what's happening, right? And from what I see from the guy's point of view, what's the problem?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I only do it once a week.
It's only on the weekends.
I don't have any responsibilities.
I don't have any responsibilities at nighttime. I have a very stressed job. This is the way I unplug. I provide for the family. I'm tuned in. What is the issue?
Yep.
Right? So that's where it kind of gets, and the wife or the girlfriend's going crazy, like, oh my God, who is this guy? What is happening? That's cool when you're in your early 20s, but now we're 30s, we just got married, we have a house, we have kids. So that becomes a more of interpersonal dynamic issue. And the guy typically says, like, I don't neglect my responsibilities. I'm at work, I make a good living, I'm in tune with you and the kids, right? So what is the big deal if this is how I do it?
And they also say, I don't you know, I don't drink every night.
Right. I don't drink every night. Yeah, that's a very popular one. I don't drink every night, so what's the problem?
Right?
Right.
Yeah, binge drinking is no good.
The binge drinking is no good. You know, this is where usually we begin to see people in the office. And this is a difficult stage because it's, you know, in the change focused world, this is kind of pre-contemplation to me.
Yep.
Right. The person is not even contemplating it. It's just like, I'm just doing me. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm here. Oftentimes I hear like, what brings you in? My wife told me to come.
Yep. Yep.
Right? So it's, and then, you know, if the sentence starts, my family, my this, my job, my made me come here to do this, you know that they're not ready.
Yeah.
Right. So it's this kind of, I don't know what's wrong with them. This is not a problem. But to appease my wife, girlfriend, boss, whomever, I'm here. So if we could kind of get this going, I greatly appreciate it. Right. And they look at their watch every time I speak. So that's a challenging spot.
And so a bunch of college students are coming to mind for me. And what do they say? They're like, well, you know, like, I'm not going to miss this.
Right.
Like, it's 4th of July weekend. Like, of course I'm going to go down the shore.
Right. Right?
You know, it's SantaCon. It's
right.
St. Patrick's Day. It's Memorial Day. It's Labor Day.
It's a Tuesday.
there's always a reason. And they're like, I'm not going to not go and like hang out with all my friends. And like, right. This is just what we do.
Right.
And like, I sort of hate to kind of sit across from that because I'm like, yeah, you're right. That's just like what you guys do.
Right.
And like, that's what your friends do. That's just the norm. That's the norm in college. It just kind of is.
Right.
And so sometimes I want to sit across from these usually guys and I want to say like, just don't, but I know that they're going to, right? Like it just is. So really with these like weekend binge drinkers, what I find myself talking a lot about is harm reduction, right? So it's like, okay, making up a name, Bob, right. You're going to go out with your buddies. You're going to go to the bar. You're going to drink a ton. You know, how do we not black out and get into a fight?
Right. 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 Right.
Right.
Right.
How do we make sure that you don't run into the cops again? How do we make sure that you're not peeing on the balcony?
Right.
How do we make sure that you don't throw up in your bed?
Right. Right.
These are the conversations right. I have with them.
Or shit your pants
or piss the bed. Yeah.
Right. Right.
So I end up having a lot of conversations about like having a water in between.
Right.
It's not that hard.
Right.
Right. Having a water in between, moving away from hard alcohol right. to just like beer.
Right.
Right. It'll fill you up quicker. You like, you really can't, no shots.
Right. Right.
Right? You don't need to pregame all these.
Kids, oh, like, right. Right. Right.
They binge drink before they binge drink.
Right. Right. Right.
It's It's like, no, right. Like, just don't pregame. So I have so many conversations with these usually kids, just like from a harm reduction standpoint of right. like, you're going to do it.
Right.
I get it. Right. I prefer you not, but you're going right. to, it's your life. You're going to do what you're going to do. How are we going to make it so that way this doesn't turn out horribly like it did the past five times?
Right, right, right. No. And I agreed. I really like the way you're saying it because the idea person's not interested in giving it up. No. They might not even be in treatment for that reason. Right. So oftentimes there's like social anxiety that also plays a role, or they're quiet and then their other personality comes out when they're like drunk. So it serves a good amount of functions.
Yep.
To be able to do the binge drinker. You're either then the joker or the most outlandish. Oh, did you see what Bob did last night? Right. So then you're talking the town. So it's just so much positive reinforcement.
Yep.
Oftentimes in these subgroups for drinking. So it's just kind of like it's almost like a sense of who's going to do more, who's going to do more damage, and who's going to be most outlandish. And that's the person who wins.
Yep.
And that's the one that everybody talks about, and everybody's like, oh my God, that's a Bobo. He's always a hoot when he gets drunk, right? So it's just so reinforcing.
Yep.
So there, to your point, it's not, person's not ready.
Yeah.
So to me, to your point, harm reduction, just let's structure it a little bit more, because when you're binge drinking often, like, it's complete dysregulation. Right. Oh, the whole point is to get to complete dysregulation. So if we could put some gentle boundaries, mm-hmm. or some safe space around this binge drinking. Hopefully that could be part of it, so mm-hmm. that there's reduction of how much damage you're doing.
Right? Do you want to hear a funny one that sure. I came up with once?
Sure.
I was chatting with this, I don't know, in his 20s. 20, 21-year-old in college. And I was talking to him, and I said, I'll call him Bob again. Mm-hmm. And I said, Bob, you know, what do you actually need to, like we have these great conversations in session, but outside right. of session, like, they might as well be, right. like, right. you know, what do you need to remember at 1 o'clock on Saturday right. when you're, I don't know, like 13 beers deep? And he goes, well, I need to remember that, like, this is going to make me feel like shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, okay, great. And I was like, but how are you going to remember that? And he goes, I don't know. And he thought about it for a while. And he's like, well, what about this idea? He's like, I'm going to put, you know, dog poop bags in my pockets. So every time that I go into my pocket to feel something, I'm going to think dog poop, dog shit. I'm going to feel like dog shit tomorrow. And that's going to remind me that I'm going to feel like shit if I don't, you know, like if I overdo it and I don't drink water. And I said, you think it'll work? And he goes, let's see. So he filled his pocket full of dog poop bags without dog poop in them. Right. And that was his little reminder during binge drinking when he's completely to drink water. And he came in session next week. He's like, you'll never guess. He's like, I felt great. He's like, I had a little bit of a hangover, but I got rid of it Sunday, blah, blah, blah. I was able to go do this, blah, blah, blah. So with these kids, usually with binge drinking, I find myself being really creative with finding creative ways of, like, and if they could have like three less, then right. like that's the win.
Yeah. No, for sure. I really, yeah, it's the idea of how do we limit the damage that you're about to do, yeah. right? And not to unpack all the social things, the reasons why you do it, because I'm sure they're all very good reasons.
Yep.
But if we could kind of have a little bit of a containment, unlike, it almost seems like, now that I think about it, for this subgroup, it's like, we need a little bit of containment. Can we just put like gentle arms around what you're doing versus the first health nut group? It's okay to push. It's okay to be a little open. Don't have to always be in control.
Yep.
Nothing will happen if you allow yourself to at least feel something that's different from the usual, right? So it's just interesting how one person needs a little bit more openness, the other person needs, you know, gentle containment.
Yeah, containment.
So those people do show up, to your point. To me, oftentimes there's like a related issue. They don't even see how it's connected, but sometimes that's how you get to it. Yep. It's through like, I'm anxious, or my girlfriend, wife, friend, whomever, parents are saying, this is a problem.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right.
Right. So those are the three. This is where it begins to like trickle in into our therapy sessions.
So I have an idea where you're going for, there's one more, right?
Yeah. The fourth one would be, this is where you typically see a lot of in therapy, just substance abuse treatments in general. This is your lonely, this is your life is meaningless, I have no passion, I'm bored, individual. This is where, you know, is there a path for the second subgroup and the third subgroup to end in the fourth subgroup? So like the 1 to 3 a day, the binge drinker. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
I mean, oftentimes it's a precursor for that.
Mm-hmm.
But these types of individuals is oftentimes that, you know, when the chronic drinking sets in, usually don't drink that much in public.
Yep.
They typically, because they're super paranoid about people finding out about their secret.
It's the last thing they want.
Right. So like holiday parties, they might have one or two, or just limit drinking. So nobody says, oh, Bob has a drinking problem. That's so weird. Mm-hmm. But he never gets out of control. Never seen an issue. Yeah. Right. Like, because it's lonely drinking. It's really kind of as a solution for deep wounds, deep emotional wounds.
Yeah.
This is where they just don't, you know, they feel like life doesn't like them. Like, I don't know, it's the simplest way I could put it. Like, not that they don't like life, it's just almost like the external life is just turned their back on these individuals.
Yeah.
So they're not satisfied at work. They have no meaning or passion, or at least they feel like they don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
They just feel lonely, disconnected. So even, let's say, one gentleman comes to mind, even like at a party or social gathering or family, Christmas, whatever the case may be, right? Although there's a lot of people, they feel even lonelier because even though the house is full of people, they feel disconnected, not attached to these individuals. So that loneliness feeling actually spikes up.
Mm.
mm-hmm. because there's like generally there's people, but the connection isn't there. So those are the types of people that sneak into the basement or wherever the liquor is stored, right? To kind of get in a couple just or several or many, mm-hmm. You know, just to kind of create an even keel for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are the types of folks who find their way into substance use, abuse treatment.
Usually, yeah. Usually they start with somebody like us, like on a lower level of, I mean, unless they need like a detox where there's so much alcohol that they actually need medical detox.
Yep.
You know, oftentimes they start here. And then again, it's, to me, that unlike the second and the third group here, they know it's a problem, but they don't want to admit it's a problem. So they still come up with the same reasons as the third group.
Yeah.
But there's a different quality. While the second and the third are feeling self-assured about what the fuck is the problem.
Right.
Right. The fourth group doesn't really have that edginess often. It has like, I know, I'm not going to tell you I know. I'm going to tell you I still think it's bullshit. But like, I know I have a problem.
Yeah.
Right. And it's really kind of getting to that point. It's challenging because there's usually emotional traumas, and then there's maybe physical or sexual traumas. There's some significant loss. There's just a lot of unprocessed emotions.
Yep.
And then the liquor just kind of like washes it away during that time, right? Like, so to me, it's the person who drinks in the basement. This is the person who everybody goes to sleep, the wife and the kids, and he sneaks down to have 1 to 25. So I don't know if you run into that, but that's a difficult situation, because on the one hand, they don't know anything else.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, to give up such a strong addiction that's challenging in itself, plus you still have to address all the other stuff, and usually they're not, you know, these are sometimes often actually very successful people.
Yep.
A couple of people that come to mind, they're at least from a behavioral, financial, professional level, these typical people are very high up there in the professional ladder. Some people, I've seen some people that everybody at work knew there was a problem, but because he was so senior, even I wouldn't even say definitely enabling, but like accommodations were made because of how senior and important the individual was to the overall functioning of the company. And this is like a pretty major corporation. So it sometimes takes many years, and it's challenging.
Yep. You know, two people are coming to mind. That sort of like chronic heavy use, right? So that's where a lot of like alcoholic behavior or addict behavior will kind of come out, right? So they, you know, they might like stash like little like shooters in their pockets, right? I've heard people of like stashing bottles in so many different places, right? Like in the basement, in this coat jacket, up in this vent. And I've heard of people, one guy comes to mind, he worked at a car mechanic place, and he goes, yeah, you know, some days, like if I had a lot at work,
mm-hmm.
which is first and foremost interesting, but he's like, if I have a lot at work, I'll go over and I'll get some gas and I'll put it on my hands. So it completely masks the smell when I come home. So my wife will have no idea. Right. So those behaviors where like we're hiding it, we're sneaking it, we're doing things to cover it up. Hell, maybe even other people are helping us cover it up because we're so senior in this big corporation. Those are the really tough cases, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This is just, and I often feel for them because in a way I know that there's been some trauma, but they're so disconnected from the trauma. So then it becomes like, how do we change the behavior? How do we deal with that? And then also connect to the pain. So it's just, it's a lot of heavy work.
Oh yeah.
And the creativity that people have. One guy who, I think he created like an extra compartment in his car because his wife would be going into the garage. So he would go work on the car, but then she would like sniff everything out. She couldn't find it. Right. And then turns out he had like a secret compartment. I don't even know how you do that. But like, there's just so many creative ways to be able to do that. So in today's world, I mean, there's just some good medical interventions, you know, like Anti-abuse comes to mind. That's often used. Their compliance, of course, is an issue. Yep. But like if the person is taking it, like there's one gentleman had basically like a camera. Because you have to blow into it to make sure, right? So, and it takes, I think it's like random, or so it's throughout the day, so it's impossible to drink. So that, antabuse, there's a couple of things that really can help with that behavior, but the buy-in is the most important thing, right? Like, why am I doing it? There's usually also maybe not really, again, not emotionally connected to, there's some passive suicidal kind of ideation or thoughts, not necessarily active, but like if you really get down to it and you really get the person to open up, it's like, ah, what's the use?
Yep.
Right. So that's when you get to like, what's the use? I mean, that's challenging, because then you have to process the trauma. Then you have to like motivate to find ways to fulfill an empty soul. So it's just a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Just as you're saying, this is one person is just crystal clear in my mind. Right. And it is challenging. But we'll also say it is doable.
It's definitely doable. It's just, to me, this is where, you know, obviously connection to your clients and patients is super important. To me here, it's that cliche, like it's the therapeutic relationship to me is what gets people to actually quit, because it's kind of what's needed, right? There's the attachment that's needed. So if the attachment is good, usually we could use it as a platform to be able to jumpstart. If the relationship isn't good or the client doesn't feel connected, it'll never work.
No shot.
There's no reason.
No shot.
No reason.
All right. So there were our four drinkers.
Right. We got the health nut.
Uh-huh.
We got the...
I'm just stressed
kind of drinker. This is where people don't usually seek help. The binge drinker. Right. This is where problems do begin to arise, especially interpersonally with significant others most often.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much with friends, but really more girlfriend, wife kind of situation. The fourth one is where usually the other person is fed up. Right. Often like, I'm so numb, I don't even care. So I just need you to get the fuck out. Kind of a situation. And a lot of the times the gentleman that I speak to depends, and I get to see him like when it's an active issue and they're trying to work it out, to like when the wife is like numbed out, doesn't give a fuck. And then the ones that are already divorced and they're in AA and looking back like, yeah, now I'm sober, but it took me a marriage and not talking to kids and losing my whatever business or position or money in order to get here. So it's sad to see, because from my end, like I get to see people from like I drank in college, kind of like the guy you were talking about, right, to like 30 years later to like now I'm divorced, my kids hate me, I lost my profession or my money or whatever the case may be, several DUIs, so I can't even drive for the next God knows how many years, right? And that's the more damage you do, the harder it is to come back, because like, but then you're like 60, right? And these things happen. And then when somebody says, what's the use? That's a hard question to answer.
Yeah.
Like it's like you have to repair, well, probably your ex-wife is going to hate you anyway, but like you're going to repair with your kids. That's a lot of work.
Oh yeah.
Right? Like, so what typically happens, they kind of give it a go, doesn't really work. And then, you know, usually they fall out of treatment. To be honest, so let's avoid that. The message is like, if you find yourself drinking by yourself and you're alone and you're kind of putting up the facade that you drink little or people don't think you have a problem, you have a big problem. You have a big problem, and again, hopefully, you could lean in, pick up the phone.
Yeah, and there is help out there, and the help helps and the help works.
Right,
and so yeah, really, just like a call to action there is, you know, like if you find yourself in whatever category, you know, reach out.
Yeah, for sure. And it's sort of like, I have a couple of gentlemen that are in AA, in different stages of AA, was sponsored, and they in the beginning, they're sort of, I don't understand how this works, to like, I have some gentlemen, oh my God, AA saved my life. And often I hear like, no offense, doc, but like AA sent my, I was like, good, whatever. Whatever works, right? They have a sponsor, they call. It's just, when it works so beautifully.
And it is really nice to see.
It is beautiful to see, because you have these aha moments. You have these consistency after the aha moment, right? Because sometimes just aha is not enough. But like, you have the consistency. You have the ability to tolerate the urges. You have the ability to tune in what's important.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful to see when that person is able to create a life worth living, right? Like, because that's kind of what it's a life worth living. Not so much like, you know, you're not like paying your bills in the moment, but like, are you living the life that's worth living for you? And that's really, to me, that's always, oftentimes the question for these for this subgroup.
Awesome.
All right.
Awesome. Well said.
Yeah. Thank you so much, guys. As always, again, if you find yourself in some of these categories and you need help, please reach out. Mm-hmm. You could reach out to us, or you could reach out to any local provider that specializes in substance abuse.
Yeah. Agreed. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks so much.
See you next time.
Bye.